Oh no! Another Lutheran dirge and other myths.
Pastor Will Whedon, Director of Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, talking about this year's hymn sing at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We'll be doing some myth busting during our hymn sing. Double dare anyone to participate and walk away thinking Lutherans sing dirges. From God's Own Child to Lord Thee I Love. From Dear Christians One and All Rejoice to In Thee Is Gladness. Oh yeah. Lots of joy bursting out in song all over the place. And so sorry, not a dirge in sight. Real Lutheran church music.
Join Pastor Will Whedon and Issues Etc. listeners from around the world for a hymn sing at our one and only Making the Case conference in 2019. Making the Case is Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th on the campus of Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more about the premier conference for Christian laity at issuesetc.org.
I saw all these people die. Telling everybody they should move on. Some do, but not us.
Even if there's a small chance, we owe this to everyone who's not in this room to try.
We will. Whatever it takes.
That is the trailer for the blockbuster movie Avengers Endgame, part two of a story that began with Avengers Infinity War about a year ago. That earlier movie ended with, I would call, the ultimate cliffhanger. Half of the cast is dust. Half of the population of the universe is dust. The heroes have failed. The villain has succeeded and sits smiling smugly to himself, watching the sun go down on his own personal planet. How do you follow that, and how do you tell the rest of that story? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Ted Geese joins us to review the movie Avengers Endgame. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts, pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
You say in your review of Avengers Endgame that just like the Iron Man movie in the Marvel Universe created a new normal for superhero movies, Endgame does the same thing. What do you mean by that in both those cases?
Well, that Iron Man movie that came out in 2008 with Robert Downey Jr., that is, like you were saying, that just created this new normal. They didn't know it at the time. It was a bit of a risk, but it ended up kicking off this 22-movie cycle and is capped off with this Avengers Endgame film. There had already been Marvel Studio movies in the past before Iron Man. So you had, like, Blade. That's a Marvel one from 1998. The X-Men series, which kind of got kicked off in earnest in 2000. Spider-Man, there had been Spider-Man movies from like 2002. Spider-Man 2, which is, you know, by a lot of people thought of as an excellent, excellent superhero film, was from 2004. So there had already been some of these movies out there. People were getting familiar with the idea of having Marvel comic book characters brought to the big screen again in a kind of a new way, but Iron Man with Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, Tony Stark, really kicked this off. Now, with this film, it's almost like that is capped off, and there is a pretty strong passing of the torch that is occurring in this. So the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is now set up for a future stretch of movies, and whether they do a similar sort of thing like they have done here, where they're kind of this interwoven meta-narrative that has a beginning, middle, and an end, or if they do something different, who's to say? But the Tony Stark Iron Man 2008 film with Robert Downey Jr. really starts that off, and he also as a character is important for ending or capping this off here.
All right, we're going to spoil the movie, so if you have not seen Avengers Endgame, you probably would be wise to listen to this review after you went to see the movie. So with that spoiler alert in place, we have to talk about the ultimate cliffhanger that was the previous Avengers ensemble movie and where it left everybody and why and how this story resolves that.
Yeah, the previous one, it all ended with the character, the mad titan Thanos, getting his gauntlet covered in the Infinity Stones and snapping his fingers and causing a half of all the living things in the universe and on Earth particularly to vanish, to turn to dust and to go away. And he envisioned or had this idea that by doing this, of course, the resources would be doubled for everyone because there'd be half the people and animals and creatures to feed in the universe, but still the same amount of resources. The thing that happened, though, is that everybody became very sad that all of these people that they loved and cared about, you know, that dispassionately, like randomly, half of them all vanished. Of course, the way that works is it's not, you know, just half your family vanishes. Sometimes it's somebody's whole family that vanishes. And what happens at the beginning of this film is a character that really wasn't in the Infinity War film at all, the character of Hawkeye, played by Jeremy Renner. It isn't just that like half of his family, like his wife and his two sons and his daughter, go away in this snapping of the finger of Thanos. All of them do, and he's left by himself. And of course, each character experiences loss in different ways as a result of that. And this film really focuses on how different characters deal with the loss that they've experienced. Some, like Tony Stark, actually, or, you know, Bruce Banner, the Hulk, played by Mark Ruffalo, they actually kind of figure out a way to carry on and to make a new life for themselves. Characters like Natasha Romanoff, the Black Widow, and Steve Rogers, Captain America, played by Chris Evans, and Scarlett Johansson. These characters, they don't really have much in the way of a personal life, and the Avengers were a big part of that. So they kind of doubled down on, to varying degrees, on that Avengers initiative. And then people like Clint Barton, that character of Hawkeye, he loses everything, and he becomes focused on fighting crime to the point of being like a, you know, a deadly assassin, like going after triads, you know, in Japan. So each one, and of course, then there's Thor, and maybe we'll talk more about Thor too, but they all kind of deal with it differently. So what you get is this kind of like the first act of this film is really focused on them dealing with their loss, and also particularly because they're the superheroes who are supposed to stop this kind of thing, dealing with their failure.
So let's talk about that theme of dealing with failure. The two major storylines here, I take it, in this film are that of Iron Man, Tony Stark, and Thor. And these are two guys that are dealing with failure very differently, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, the other major storyline too is Captain America. These guys, and really this is a film that focuses more on that original set of Avengers that were in the first Avengers film where they were all kind of together. But yeah, so Tony Stark and Thor are dealing with it in different ways. Like Tony Stark and Pepper Potts, they get married, they have a child. He kind of retires from anything to do with the Avengers and is just kind of trying to lead a domestic life, and seems to be quite happy in that, and has reservations about getting reinvolved in anything that might come up, you know, like doing it that would deal with the past. Thor, on the other hand, seems to be stuck in the past, or at least unable to move forward. He spirals into a kind of depression and is holed up at the, you know, new Asgard and Norway by himself, living in a little shack with just a couple of characters, the character of Korg, big rock guy from Thor Ragnarok, and his little sidekick. The three of them just kind of in this little shack playing video games and drinking beer. Like, and he's become heavier. He's got a beer belly. He's kind of, you know, people have seen it and thought of it as kind of being Lebowski-esque. Like, think the Big Lebowski, the dude from the Big Lebowski, you know, house coat, sunglasses, shambling around, you know, shadow of himself, kind of a thing. So he has kind of descended into a kind of malaise and has to be really yanked out of it to be a part of any of it.
On the other side of the break, we'll answer the question, how do the surviving superheroes in Avengers Endgame reverse the situation that they find themselves in at the end of Avengers Infinity War? They do. How they do it, we'll find out next.
Everybody in the neighborhood is dressing up to be there too. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Nadia Bolz Weber calls for a sexual reformation in her latest book, Shameless. How does her reformation compare with the truths rediscovered during the 16th century Reformation? I've written a review of Shameless in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Andrew Abraham details his journey from Catholic priest to Lutheran pastor. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Peace Evangelical Lutheran Church of Chehalis, Washington. Biblical, historic Christianity, whose source is Scripture, whose heart is the gospel. If you're in Southwest Washington, join us for the divine service. You will receive Jesus, crucified and risen again for the forgiveness of your sins. We promise. For more information, call us at 360-748-4108.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
We're reviewing the movie Avengers Endgame. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. So here's the $10,000 question, Ted. How do the surviving superheroes reverse the situation that they find themselves in at the end of Avengers Infinity War?
Okay, so one thing that this Marvel Cinematic Universe has been doing is these are standalone films for the most part. Sometimes you have sequels, but they are being interwoven into this big meta narrative, meaning that all of them are kind of interlocking together in some way or interweaving together. And one of the things that they often do is they have these end credit scenes or mid-credit end credit scenes that then take what happened in the movie you just watched and set things up for future movies. And they all kind of just start to interlock together. So in the second of the Ant-Man movies, you have this post-credit scene where Ant-Man is going into the subatomic realm. And while he's down in the subatomic realm, then Thanos snaps his fingers and the people who are taking care of things on the surface vanish. And he's trapped down there. So then 5 years after everything that happened with Thanos, you know, randomly a rat, you know, steps on a button on a thing and opens it up and pops him back out on the other side. And what he discovers is that while the world went 5 years along the path of time, for him it was like 5 hours or something. So having this realization, he thinks to himself, well, I guess maybe we can, maybe there's a way inside this subatomic realm to then control that in some way where you go in at one point of time and pop out at a different point of time. So then what that introduces is the idea of time travel into the cinematic universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And some people, there's detractors to this idea. Like there's people who do not like this. They don't like it when it shows up in Harry Potter, The Prisoner of Azkaban. They don't like it when it shows up in, you know, the Star Trek reboot in 2009 or different places like that. Here, you know, the directors know this. The Russo brothers realize this. So they even kind of mitigate that by referencing by name other time travel movies, particularly Back to the Future. So that Back to the Future series of films. And with that Back to the Future, you know, like if you're familiar with Back to the Future, particularly Back to the Future Part 2 from 1989, then the way that they go about trying to fix the problem will seem very familiar to that movie. Like they have to go back into the past. And in this case, they have to go back in the past and take those Infinity Stones from different points in the past so they can bring them all together in the future so that they can have an Infinity Gauntlet of their own to then reverse what Thanos did. But in order to do that, they have to go in the past and they have to avoid themselves and people that they know, or, you know, not throw off the past timeline. So again, this is similar to Back to the Future Part 2.
Well, so here's the problem I think the critics are going to have of that deus ex machina for the solving this thing. Anything can happen in a superhero universe. You can't travel in time. But Back to the Future was called Back to the Future. It was the premise
mm-hmm. yes.
of the entire series of movies. You don't get a movie without the time travel involved there, but that's not the premise of something like this. Some people might say, well, that's the easiest possible way out of this. Of course, I can't think of another way, but that's the easiest possible way to do this.
Yeah, and, you know, they go back, like they even figure out, well, you know, there's three of them all in New York City at one point. Like if we go there, then that's even easier, right? So, but when they get there, they're looking for Doctor Strange because Doctor Strange has one of them. But of course, they've arrived before Doctor Strange became Doctor Strange. He's still just a surgeon somewhere in town. So then they talk to Tilda Swinton's character, you know, the Ancient One or whatever her name was. And then you have like the Incredible Hulk and her having a conversation about how this is going to work and how this is going to play out. And that's where you kind of get one of those time travel kind of conversations. And the way they kind of envision this is that, you know, if you go back and you take that out, you could cause, you know, multiple different futures to occur. So the solution was that after you're done with them, you need to bring them back and put them exactly in the spot that you took them from. So this is their kind of way around that. But again, it opens up this idea of multiverses or multiple iterations of the same thing, which then loops back around to what Doctor Strange said when he said he looked at all the possible futures, went through time and looked at all the possible futures, saw, you know, 14 million of them or something, and there was only one where they succeeded. So that kind of almost creates that, the all of those variety of future possibilities. So, I mean, like time travel is always one of those things where the nerdiest of nerds will spend hours talking about it and enjoy the heck out of the conversation. So in a way, you know, you're going to have people who are going to go, yeah, that's the cheapest way out of this. And you're going to have other people that will relish the, you know, what they're experiencing by seeing it. The other thing that's interesting about it is that it creates this opportunity for the Russo brothers and the Marvel like studios to do like a victory lap. Because by going back and getting those Infinity Stones from the past, they get to go back into previous films that they've made and have kind of a fun victory lap where you get to see little bits and pieces of these previous films or these locations or times of films that the audience enjoyed in the past during these 20 movies leading up to these last two.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie Avengers Endgame. How satisfying is it as a viewer to see that victory lap? We'll be right back.
sanctifying your daily errands with the Word of God. You're listening to Issues, etc.
Welcome back to Issues, etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We are reviewing the movie Avengers Endgame. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. In about 15 minutes, we'll get a biography on 4th century Bishop of Alexandria, Athanasius. Pastor Will Whedon will be our guest. If you live in the greater St. Louis area, come on out to Concordia Publishing House tomorrow, Friday the 3rd of May. We'll be broadcasting live from 3 to 5 Central at Concordia Publishing House at 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. We'll be joined by regular guests Dr. Alvin Schmidt and Dr. Christopher Mitchell. The CPH Spring Warehouse Sale begins tomorrow, May 3rd, and it runs through Monday, May the 6th. Check out the great savings there by clicking on the CPH Warehouse Sale logo at issuesetc.org. Pastor Geese, you spoke before the break about this victory lap because the time travel scenario allows them, requires them to go back into the previous movies and revisit certain scenes there. You said it was a victory lap. How satisfying is it as a viewer to watch that victory lap?
Yeah, that makes up like the second act of the film. And there are parts of that that are really satisfying. Like there's moments where I think probably some of the most satisfying parts of it is it also helps you see the development of the character, whoever the character is. Because when, for instance, Captain America runs into himself, but it's like the 2014 version of Captain America or whatever, you can see where that character has actually changed over time. You know, like there's a moment where, you know, the younger, more plucky Captain America, you know, sees himself, the future self, of course, doesn't think that it's a future self, and he thinks that it's a Hydra agent, you know, and he's going to fight himself. And, you know, the older Captain America's like, okay, I guess we're going to do this. And the young guy is like, version of himself is, I can do this all day, right? So you see this exchange of, or like this passage of time for these characters, of the development that they have managed to do. And it's kind of amazing that they've managed to do as much character development as they have done. And it's probably most evident in characters like Captain America and Iron Man and in Thor.
So again, a spoiler alert, somebody has to give their life in order for this plan to work. How does that turn out?
Well, you know, my wife and I, you know, had rewatched Infinity War in preparation to go seeing Endgame. And along the way, I'd thought about it a little bit. We had a year to think about it. And, you know, there's this interaction between Thanos and Tony Stark and Doctor Strange. And, you know, where at the last second, right before Thanos is going to kill Tony Stark, off on some planet somewhere, like his homeworld, Thanos' homeworld. At the very last second, then Doctor Strange says, stop, I'll give you the time stone if you spare his life. And he does, and he gives him the time stone and spares his life and basically says, you know, we're in the end game now. What you figure out, or you could figure out, or what I figured out was, it's certainly going to be Tony Stark that does. That Doctor Strange has looked at all these possible futures and he sees that Tony Stark has to live so that he can come back later and defeat Thanos. And that is exactly what happens. So Tony Stark ends up getting the Infinity Stones on a gauntlet and, you know, Thanos is there and says, you know, that he's inevitable, and Tony Stark says, I am Iron Man. Snaps his fingers and fixes it. So, you know, like, and again, that him saying I am Iron Man just goes right back to what he said at the end of the Iron Man film. So it's this kind of perfect loop.
But it means something else. When he said it the first time in that film that we talked about earlier, it was, yeah, I'm going to own the fact that I am this cool guy.
Yes.
But it has to mean something else when he does it sacrificing his life.
Oh, yeah, because this is it. He's not, I mean, I guess he doesn't know whether or not he's going to survive it, but I mean, he does know that he's like, you know, Thanos, it almost killed him. It almost kills the Hulk at one point. So he does this, and maybe he doesn't know that he could survive or not survive, but odds are not good. So he says that, and he's gone. Like, he dies, and there's some very touching moments with that. And he gives up his life so that other people can live, and it's the perfect capping off of this. So, you know, the Christian viewer who's watching this, you know, Tony Stark is certainly not Jesus in any stretch of the imagination, you know, womanizer, drinker, you know, playboy. But along the way, Tony Stark as a character grows and develops and, you know, actually starts to give a damn about the world and people and life in general. And as a character, when he says it at the end, he's a changed person. So again, this is that character arc, this change of character that occurs over time. And that makes it very satisfying, I think, for viewers, because, you know, these aren't static characters. They're not two-dimensional, for want of a better term, comic book characters. They're rounded out. There's more drama to them. There's more to dig into. They're more relatable, I guess.
I gotta ask, is there any, even a hint, a scintilla that, I mean, you kill off the guy who essentially saved your franchise.
Right, yeah.
And at this point, you put Robert Downey Jr. in an Iron Man suit and you make money. You just print money. Mm-hmm. Is there any hint that this isn't the end for Tony Stark?
Well, at the end of The Wrath of Khan, like Star Trek II, they were like, oh, darn, we just killed off Spock, right? So then you have like the, you know, the search for Spock, and you bring back Spock, and you carry on with the story. I mean, I suppose I think that it would cheapen, in the same way that people are irritated by time travel stuff, that they feel like it kind of cheapens getting out of a jam. I think that there would be people who would find that that would cheapen his sacrifice. This is not the sort of thing where they have, like, where you have his Good Friday death and 3 days later his Easter resurrection. I don't think that's going to be the case. If he shows up again in future MCU stuff, the smarter move to make for them would be that, you know, well, here's something that he recorded about some technology or something like that, or maybe a flashback scene, because they can do that now. I mean, you know, you've got Michael Douglas is in this movie again, and he's in it in the 1970s. So he's, again, that younger Michael Douglas version. So, and they've done that already with Robert Downey Jr. So they can have him in there as a younger version of himself or whatever. But the odds that they would bring him back, I mean, it's not impossible. I like, and I mean, if they do, then that's another correlation between the story of Christ's sacrifice for humanity. And they've done this kind of like the very first Avengers film, he was the one that flew up with the nuclear, you know, warhead up into space through the portal or whatever and blew it up to close off the alien invasion, fell back down to Earth with his arms outstretched like he was on the cross, lands on the ground, and it looks like he's dead, but he's not, and he comes to. So they've teased with this kind of stuff before, but it was all pointing to this, that the actual real big sacrifice that he makes. If they go the step further and bring him back, then they are definitely walking right into a much more closer analogy to Christ's life, death, and resurrection.
Where does it go from here? I mean, you have this huge buildup to these two ensemble films, and this one literally named Endgame. Where does Marvel and the Avengers franchise go next?
Well, Thanos is out of the picture by the end of this film. But, you know, Disney just acquired Fox. So when they went and bought Fox, then they got rights to other characters that they did not have rights to before. So one of the characters they now have rights to is Galactus, which is a comic book character that is the eater of worlds. So that can be your new big bad guy. And he, of course, is the one who has the Silver Surfer as his, you know, herald and all of the rest of it. So now the Fantastic Four and all of that stuff, that can come into the Disney Marvel Studios version of it. Because Marvel licensed these properties out to different companies. So Fox and Sony and different companies. So now they're kind of purchasing these things back as their contracts come to an end, or they can buy the contracts out. So they could, in theory, if there's an appetite for it, do another 22 movies where in the end they're fighting against Galactus. You know, will lightning strike twice if they do that kind of a thing? Or are we just witnessing like the end of a golden age of superhero films, and whatever they come up with next is not going to be the same? I think that they've started to bite into the poisonous apple of the social justice warrior kind of identity politic thing, and that can rot out, you know, what they're up to. So they need to be very careful about that. And, you know, so maybe we've just hit like the end of a golden age of superhero films.
Why do you say that last observation about the social justice warrior agenda?
Because it divides your audience, and there are people who just are not going to be able to stomach it. And once they hit their limit, they stop going to films. And like this film made a tremendous amount of money because people were invested in it. Like you have 11 years of making these films, and you have 22 different films, and people have their favorite characters, and they're invested in it. And unlike something like Game of Thrones, which, you know, is a more narrow bandwidth of the population would be watching it, this is more accessible to a larger group of people, including families with young kids. So, you know, if you then divide your audience to the point where there's just swaths of people that are like, I just can't go to another one of these. I'm tired. I don't want to. I got enough of that in the rest of my life. I don't want to hear, you know, the social justice warrior kind of identity politics stuff pushed on me here too. I'm supposed to be escaping all of that and just having a good time. Then they might end up eroding their audience to the point where they won't be able to do what they just did. That's what I'm saying by that. Now, if they really like money and money's important, maybe they'll figure that out. But if they are ideologues who think that the other way to go is the better way to go, then they may be willing to lose money for that point. I don't know what they're going to do with that. But if they do go that way, if it increases in that fashion, they could lose portions of their audience for sure.
It is kind of crazy to think that the Marvel franchise has far surpassed Star Wars, Star Trek, Harry Potter, all the big franchises.
Oh yeah. I mean, it is the granddaddy of all of them now. Like there's nothing that gets like it is like, particularly Star Wars. Like it's unbelievable that it's eclipsing that they have managed to make, you know, this big story, this big world where things are connected, where people even like some of the villains, like the character of like Loki, you know, by Tom Hiddleston, or like Thanos is one that people actually have feelings about him as a character, you know, because the last film was the Infinity War one was practically his movie, right? Even at the end, it said Thanos will return in Endgame. You know, they've created something where I think that it's, if you went back to 2008 and Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, I don't know, even though that was a wildly successful film, much to people's surprise, I don't think that they could have envisioned that this is like where they could have ended up. Like, I think that it's more of a gift to filmmaking and to, you know, the modern film era than anyone could have expected. And it does. I just think it eclipses most of these other franchises.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
We will be remembering 4th century Bishop of Alexandria, Athanasius, as the church remembers him on this day, with Pastor Will Whedon after the break.
Come, Holy Spirit, Lord and Comforter, with words of truth our feeble faith assure. These words open Mark Preuss's new Pentecost hymn for the Lutheran Church, available exclusively in the Lutheran Witness. Grab the May issue of the Missouri Synod's flagship magazine and dig into what the Bible and Lutheran theology have to say about the Holy Spirit, who He is, how He works, and what He wants for your life. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Emmanuel Press is a Lutheran-owned business in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in operation since 2004. That's 15 years of publishing liturgical and devotional books, 15 years of collaborating with Lutheran authors, artists, and translators. Thanks to our loyal customers and Issues Etc., we look forward to many more years of confessing and teaching the Christian faith. Visit us online at emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L, press.us.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Discover a truly Lutheran approach to education. Concordia University Chicago's Center for the Advancement of Lutheran Liberal Arts supports a vibrant, growing community of classical educators. Whether you're a teacher, administrator, parent, or homeschooler, we have the resources and contacts you need to start a child's journey into the Lutheran Liberal Arts. Visit cuchicago.edu/calla. That's C-A-L-L-A.